there aren't words. I've seen it a handful of times when we're woodcock hunting or something like that, but it's one of the greatest things. Actually working and training these dogs and spending so much time and energy on them and taking them out. And if we killed something one day or not, that's not a big deal. But seeing your hard work pay off and seeing your dog have a good time is all worth it.
Where else can you go to not only find the information on how to train your dog, but the best deals on training equipment as well? Standing Stone Supply has everything you need to create that next versatile champion, from DT system electronics down to even emergency med kits to take with you on your hunting trips. If you need some help with your training program, then their step-by-step online course might be a great fit for you, making it a convenient one-stop shop for the knowledge as well as the gear to take your training to the next level. Hit up standingstonesupply.com and promo code GDIY will save you 10%. Being an upland hunter in the South nowadays unfortunately means a lot of travel to try and find birds for my dogs. This means it's even more important that my map scouting is reliable to justify the effort. This is where Onyx comes in. I can honestly say that Onyx directly impacts the level of success I find on my trips. Whether it's the private versus public land boundaries, the expanding number of unique layers and features by state, or the 3D mapping capabilities, my initial step in planning my hunting trip starts with Onyx. To know where you're going, you have to first know where you stand. Check out Onyx Hunt Maps and use code GDIY20 at checkout to save 20%.
All right, everybody, welcome back to another episode of GDIY presented by Standing Stone Supply. We have yet another bittersweet into a bird camp here. We're currently wrapping up the grouse camp in Wisconsin, and I am joined with a couple buddies from afar that decided to drive up here from the southern route, I guess. We got Jacob Little, who has been on the podcast before from a few years ago when we did the South Dakota episode. And then I have my buddy Zach Grant, who is from Chattanooga, Tennessee. And he did a profile with us a while back. Guys, welcome back to the show, I should say. And it's been an adventure. We haven't had the longest camp in this particular stop in Wisconsin, but we've had a few stories pop up. Not all good either, but welcome back to the show, Jacob.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So, you know, when people go on hunting trips, sometimes things don't go as planned or as we had hoped. And Zach, I'm going to go ahead and start with you because your adventure started on the way up here. So, why don't you go ahead and kind of introduce yourself, what kind of dog you run, and just kind of lead us up to the point when you strike out on your grand adventure and where it went off the road, so to speak.
We were planning on driving overnight. Everything was packed up, ready to go. Hit the road about 8 p.m., and I'm driving wide awake, just having a great drive. I hadn't had to stop yet, and then about 3 o'clock, going down the highway, a deer just happened to be standing right in the middle of it, and I swerved, I slowed down, and still ended up hitting the deer. A deer ran off fine.
Yo, you didn't even tell me this. So the deer that totaled your car just ran off with a limp?
Not even a limp. It ran. I hit its back end, kind of jumped up a little bit, and it was gone.
We're in the middle of Illinois, so first off, you were planning on, you were so anxious to get to grouse camping, and granted, you only had a couple days, like this was going to be a very short, quick trip for you. Either way, like best case scenario, you're only getting 2 days full-time of hunting up here, and so to do that, you were going to drive throughout the night, leaving at 8 p.m., to get here the following morning to be ready to hunt with us, and so halfway at 3 a.m. in the middle of Illinois, a deer jumps up in front of you, totals your car, and it leaves unscathed. Yep. Golly, that's some crap luck for sure right out of the gates. I gotta back up again. 2 days isn't a whole lot of time for the average person. They might be thinking like, man, that's a lot of drive time, energy, maybe gas money to get here just for 2 days of hunting. So like, give me your mindset going into it. What were you hoping of, dreaming of? What was your goals out of doing a trip like that? Because I tell everybody, like, sometimes you just gotta go for it if you want to make trips like this happen. And you driving throughout the night, it sounds like you're kind of living by example on that one.
Well, as you know, we've spent several days hunting in Tennessee for grouse, and the only one we've ever seen was out of season. What I really wanted to do was get my dog to understand that we're not just going on hikes in the woods. We're doing it for a purpose. Coming up here and actually getting to see the habitat and getting some bird exposure was my main goal. So maybe that transfers back down there, or maybe we just end up coming up here every year and he gets to learn and have fun doing that.
And that's a important takeaway, because we talk all the time, like, there is no substitute for wild birds. And so fast forward a little bit, you have the misfortune on the way up here. You hit the deer. You get in late yesterday. I know Jacob and I were kind of toying around with what covers to hunt, when and where and how, because we kept holding out hope that you would, you know, be able to get here. For long story short, you had continual car troubles getting here. You limped all the way here. And was it worth it? I guess I should say, because that 2 days really got cut down to 1 day of hunting for you, and you were still having to deal with some car issues on the side, calling the shop and figuring out, you know, your plans and stuff like that. So was it worth that? And not like you knew that you're going to have car issues going into it, but just now that it's over, we're leaving tomorrow morning, would you say, like, yeah, I'm still glad I did?
Well, so initially when we took Arlo out first thing this morning, I would have said no. He just, as y'all saw, he was just playing. He wasn't hunting. He didn't care. It was just another day in the woods in Tennessee at that point. But after tonight, I would say it was well worth it to see my dog pick up scent and track and do what he's good at. So,
yeah. And Arlo, for the listeners, he's a Weimaraner, 3 years old. And we're going to come back. We're going to talk about what happened tonight, because it was a pretty cool little walk. It's one of those, like, you had a smile on your face the whole time walking out, and you've been smiling ever since, even with all the other BS and headache that you have to deal with. So that's impressive. Jacob, you were coming up here, you know, you used to live down there in Tennessee with us, and you can relate to what Zach's describing as, you know, chasing unicorns. Everybody that's listening to this podcast kind of knows how that is down our way. But you recently moved to Indiana, and it just timing and everything, you wanted to go on a trip, and it worked out that you could come to Wisconsin. You actually got to this specific location a few days ahead of me. Why come here instead of going up to, like, Michigan, to where you've been kind of shooting up the past year or so trying to figure things out?
Yeah, so we were trying to hit a new state, somewhere different. We've been trying to plan a trip for the last couple seasons since I moved up, and last year didn't work out too well. And you said you're going to be in Wisconsin this year. It was going to work good for me with work. Decided to come up here and just take a week off work and give it a try, really.
Because you didn't give Rough Grouse a big try, like, you had a concerted effort until last season when you moved to Indiana, and then you're able to kind of shoot up into Michigan. I mean, I think you went out a couple times when you lived in Tennessee, but it's not like you're the diehard, you know, crazy like me that was trying real hard on a weekly basis almost.
No, I had pretty good quail cover an hour away from the house, and I could hit a different area just about every weekend and try something new. And well, I drive 6 hours and possibly
a unicorn.
Maybe see a bird, or when I can go get on good birds, watch the dog work and do that all weekend. Yeah. And once I went up to Michigan, I made a couple weekend trips. It wasn't, you could see each time the dog was piecing it together, but each time I remember getting a hold of you or somebody's like, a couple more days, he'll have it. So I wanted to make sure I had that week-long trip to get him on birds.
So the quick weekend trips were just, they weren't connecting. And every time you talk to me or anybody else, they're like, I mean, it's just like, it's right there. You had a couple close calls, but it just wasn't connecting. So next thing you know, you decide to take the plunge. You're going to come do an extended trip here in Wisconsin with us. And your story came today. Your misfortune and bad luck story came today. But before that, you're having a pretty good trip. You're having a lot of fun up here. You're able to scratch out a couple firsts for you and Tig in regards to the rough grouse. But also, you even got a little bit of fishing done while you're here.
Yeah, the muskie's always been on top of my list, and I just haven't had a chance to do it. So he needed to break a day. He put a lot of miles in, so went out there, bought a non-resident license, and went fishing and blucking out and hooking up the two.
You got that opportunity because you have one dog, and balancing the dog work, and you know, we talk about that on the podcast quite a bit, is you can do these trips like this with one dog. You might have to get creative and rest them, maybe go do a walk without the dog here and there. But instead of doing that, you just grab the rod and reel and went for the muskie, and you snagged two pretty good ones.
Yeah, there's a couple bait shops here in town. Stopped by there and picked up a rod and reel. And
so you didn't even bring a rod and reel with you. You went and bought one before you headed out there on the water.
A rod and reel combo. They sold there at the bait shop, and I planned on maybe catching a couple walleye and maybe some smallies, and ended up hooking up with a 35-inch muskie.
Heck yeah, you can't complain about that.
No, not at all.
And what's the slot here? Like, what do you have to catch to be able to keep the fish? I mean, did you even want to keep it? Or I don't know much about muskie.
I didn't look at the regs at all.
South.
I just knew I needed a license, and I wouldn't plan on keeping any. So I didn't look at the size requirements on it, which a muskie I'm going to put back in the water anyway. It's maybe if I had a mess of walleye, that'd be a little different story. But the muskie I released and went and tried to catch another one.
Gotcha. And besides the fishing and everything, you're kind of roughing it for a few days, man. You came up here budget style, kind of like how I like you, true DIY. Let's piece it together, make it work, you know, making it fit in within your vacation time from work as well as your wallet. I mean, especially now with the way gas prices are going and everything, it's hard to do that. So you were literally camping out in the back of your truck for what, 4 or 5 days before we came up here and we got the cabin?
Yeah, I left a sleeping pad at the house and my pillow. So the first night I woke up in pain a few different times, sleeping on a truck bed.
So you forgot your sleeping pad and pillow, and then you just like, well, all right, it is what it is. Yeah. And you just slept in the back of the truck anyway?
The first night I did, I went to Dollar General the next night. They sell some real cheap foam mattresses deal that sit on top of the mattress. And I grabbed some Gorilla Glue and glued them all together and folded them up and may do.
So you went to the Dollar General, got a couple mattress toppers, and just jerry-rigged it to work for it. How'd that work out for you?
A hell of a lot better than a metal truck bed.
Yeah, I can imagine. Again, it kind of comes back to not maybe the ideal situation or dream trip that anybody would kind of envision when they kind of embark on a bucket list hunt or one of these just big dream upland trips that people talk about all the time. You essentially just had to make it work. And you're like, you know, I'm going up there. I want to learn how to hunt, and I want TIG to be successful so that you can hunt them in Michigan closer to home when you go back. And you just had to make it work for what you could. You know, it's kind of like Zach, you know, he just, hey, I only have 2 days to do it, but it's better than nothing. So let's just hit the road and go. You did the same thing. You were like, I'm just going to go and make it up as I go along and figure it out.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's plenty of ground. Just got to walk, figure it out. You kind of led me in the right direction on a couple spots and just branched off from there and figured out where the grouse were going to be at and just kept piecing it together and figure out why the bird is where it's at.
Let's expand on that a little bit more. When you go into a completely foreign area, you've never been there before. You're hunting a species that you've targeted before and you've came close in another state, but you don't know this area whatsoever. And I did point you in the right direction. I even gave you a couple pins, but I didn't give you like exact spots or routes and be like, look, this is how you do it. It's like, look, go here, look for X, Y, and Z. Talk to me about the learning curve. Like going out there, were you able to piece it together off of just, you know, the basic like foundational knowledge of rough grouse, or were you just kind of walking and kicking up birds and figuring it out as you go along?
Yeah, so I had a fairly decent idea on what they'd be. We haven't had the best weather this week.
No, we haven't.
As we figured out. So I had a kind of rough idea on where the birds may want to be at, but not 100%. And the first day we got here, I just kind of wanted to get my legs loose, get the dog loose, do a quick run, and went to one of the areas you told me about, and someone was actually parked there, so I just went down the road, found the next parking spot, and started walking. And ended up being a pretty good walk. We got into a few different birds, weren't able to connect, but got good dog work out of it, and each contact, you saw him piece it together. And each contact, I was also taking a step back, figuring out, why was that bird here? And kind of just piecing out food and cover was the big thing. With a lot of rain, I was finding birds around conifers. and we've had rain all week. So just kept kind of piecing that together and figuring out the surrounding habitat around the conifers.
How thick of conifers are we talking about? Are we talking about like contiguous conifers? You're walking through it quite a bit. Are we talking about patchy, maybe just like one lone conifer in an aspen stand? Kind of describe what conifers you're targeting in.
So more the small patches is what I was kind of targeting. And there's a few times where there were birds in the big stretches of conifers. And I wouldn't say the whole forest was conifer, but good stretches of them around the aspen. But a lot of the birds at the beginning of the week, at least, were around the small batches of conifers where they can get in the cover but still move out and get food.
So just like the little small islands that you see, I guess, in and around aspen cuts, you're looking, you see, there's a little small island of conifers. Let's go walk it. Would you go in it, or were you just kind of skirting it, see if Tig would kind of catch wind and head in there? How were you handling it?
I was letting the dog do the work on most of it, where he was going in. He'll work the wind. Even though it's his first time on grouse, he understands working the wind with plenty of bob whites and then out west. And he understands that part, just putting the pressure on the grouse, because the grouse are smarter. I let him do most of the work. But if it is a larger conifer patch, then I'd get in there a little bit where I'm still hugging the edge of it, but I am getting in there where he's pushing in a little bit deeper.
Zach, is this kind of making sense so far with what you've seen in your one day? I mean, I know it's, again, not to beat the dead horse, you didn't get, unfortunately, didn't have the chance to get too many walks, but I'd say between this morning and this evening that I was with, you got to see a wide variety of places in one day.
Yeah. Yeah, it's finding food and finding cover.
Pretty much, like, we're walking and I'm pretty much giving you the 101 spiel, if you will. I think I talked to you on the way out there. I'm like, look, you know, you got one day. How much information do you want? Do you want me to, you know, just turn on the fire hose and, you know, just hit you with it? Or do you just want to ask as we go along? And you're like, you know, I want to learn as we're going through the whole time. And so I'm like, all right, well, let's talk about it. And so especially that walk this evening, it was real conifer heavy. Like, really, this wasn't islands of conifers. This was contiguous conifers. We were in it, and we found, obviously, the shelter, and there's water everywhere. So when I'm preaching, like, shelter, water, food, we had two out of three, but we just weren't finding food. And then when we started getting into a little bit of food, we found a bird. You know, it's funny how that works. And, you know, again, we're going to get to the Zach walk, because that really, like, I just, you're still just excited about what happened with Arlo, the transformation. And it's just fascinating to hear when a dog comes into contact with wild birds, how it just flips a switch that fast. But Jacob, first, you finally found success with Tig. I want to hear that story of the first grouse that you came across with Tig, and that moment that's like the light bulb came on for him.
Yeah, so we were a good ways into a walk on, it's been a couple of days of hunting. You can see him piecing together. There's a few times I didn't hold up my end of the bargain. But
sounds about right. We all do that.
Yeah, and we were walking, it was a good conifer patch. It was probably 100 yards long or so, but it was on a hillside. We had a big swamp down the bottom, aspen on top, and then he's working cover, but there's a grouse that flushed out of the tree up top, and I watched it fly out of the tree, and it landed about 20 yards in front of me, and I just kind of froze, because I don't want to flush it. I want him to still work it when he comes and checks back in. He starts circling around once he does come in, and I'm trying to cast him over to where he's going to get on the other side of it. Well, the wind swirls, and he just locks straight up behind me, and so I'm like, well, this only going to go one or two ways, and so I start creeping in. And it takes off. I shoot. It's through the conifers. I don't really see where it goes. Yeah, I know I didn't see it fall, but maybe it cast it down shortly after. I send him on a search. He's searching for probably 15 minutes or so. And I end up calling. We're going to just keep moving. Well, before we move, I decide I'm going to give him some water and take the vest off, let him drink out of a bowl. And we're probably sitting there 5 minutes or so. He puts his nose up in the air, starts smelling around. Then I grab the gun because I hear something at this point. The bird falls just about in our lap.
No
it was,
shit.
It was about 7 foot up in a tree. I just didn't look up in it, and it falls right into our lap. And I just took a step back, let him get the retrieve. He brought it to me, and that's all she wrote.
Seriously. So, all right. So we talk about sometimes, like, things are just meant to be, right? And so it sounds like every step of this, it was just kind of meant to be. I mean, you're walking, you see the bird up in the top of the tree, and it pitches down right in front of you and it just hangs out waiting for the dog to handle it. And then it gets up, and you have the typical rough grouse shot to where if you see the bird before it flushes, 9 times out of 10, you're going to miss. That kind of seems par for the course with this. But then after you send him on a search and you come up empty, you're just watering him and taking a break. And then after a while, the bird just falls right in front of you.
Yeah, if I would have walked away a minute beforehand, I would have had no idea that bird was that I shot the bird. In the tree it fell out of, it couldn't have been more than 7-8 foot tall. I just didn't look up.
Wow. It's hard to believe, honestly, especially with Tig sitting right there. He didn't smell it, but like you said, before the bird fell, his nose went up. And I guess with scenting conditions, if the thermals aren't dropping and everything, I guess it's just sitting up there, and it's probably just any wind or whatever is just pushing that scent, like, away from y'all.
Yeah, because it was late morning, so thermals would have been rising at that point.
Yeah.
Wind was swirling down in this bottom. But he was searching. He searched hard. He was going close to 100 yards out and then working everything from there all the way back in. And
I can attest for his, you know, you can call it duck search, but it's just a hunt him up command, and he's got a quality one. So it's, I mean, I can attest for that, but I'm still just trying to picture sitting there watering your dog. And it's, I've had where you shoot, you think you miss, or maybe it's 50-50 and the dogs just miraculously come up with it. I've had it to where you continue on a hunt and the dogs just randomly walk up with a bird, and you're like, okay, cool. I don't think I've ever been there to where you're just standing there and the bird just falls.
Yeah, it was
right in front of you.
I was sitting down and he was laying down just drinking water. Then he put his nose up. I heard something. I grabbed the gun, no vest, and stood up, started walking 2 steps, and the bird just falls a few feet away from me.
Man. All right. So that's a good first bird story. How'd you see Tig react after that? After, like, you finally got the bird in his mouth? I mean, I don't know, if did you actually send him on the retrieve? I mean, if it fell right in front of you, you just pick it up, or did he go grab it and hand it to you?
I mean, it wasn't much of a retrieve. I just looked at Tig fetch and he just walked right in front of me, picked it up and gave it to me.
Yep, completed it. Got it.
Yeah.
So how did he respond after that? Any difference in how he was hunting, his enthusiasm, his range, his tempo? Like, did anything change that you noticed?
Yeah, his range went great. He went way out there and got on the other side of a swamp and couldn't get back to me. He couldn't figure it out. And then, so I had after that, for the rest of that walk, it just wasn't that great. I think he just got too excited. And then he got confused with getting on the other side of the swamp, and I was calling him, it was echoing, so he was actually pushing him away. And then we ended up going back to the truck, sat down, had a good come to Jesus moment for both of us. And
settle down now.
We went on hit a different partial, and you could just see everything click.
Yeah, you touched on one thing, the recall, the echoing, when they get stuck. A lot of people, that throws a lot of people for a loop when they're calling their dog, who typically has a pretty sound recall, and they just keep getting further and further away, and they don't really know how to respond. And you were telling me about this one later, to where you're kind of surprised that he just kept going further away, and you're like, it had to be the echo. The trick to that is just turn around and call the opposite way. It seems counterintuitive.
Which I did try that today. He was working cover, getting out there, I think. And then with Quinn and I saw he was working that way. So I was trying to call him back, and I don't know if he could hear me or not. Wind wasn't blowing the best direction. He was about 125 out, and turned around and did the whistle and looked down the GPS, and he's heading my way. So.
Well, that brings us into today kind of nicely, to where We get to a spot. First off, this morning, we knew today was going to be a long day because we really wanted to hit it hard, give Zach a chance to get his first bird and at the very least see some action and see some birds, because you've never even seen an actual bird, like you said, in season. So we were really wanting to hit it hard, and I had saved the honey hole all week long. Like, it's my favorite spot. I have so many memories on this one spot. And when Zach, you told me that you're coming up, I told Jacob, I'm like, look, here's a spot. It's my honey hole. It means a lot to me. Go have fun, but don't hunt it, you know, 2 days out from Zach getting there. Let's just kind of leave it alone, because I had it earmarked for you and Arlo. And we go down there, and lo and behold, it's gone. They leveled it. They cut it. I was just here 2 years ago. It was prime grouse habitat. In my opinion, I think it was cut a little too early. But hey, it's future habitat, right? You can't get too upset or turn your nose up at that. So that walk was kind of a dud. So we kind of shoot up a little further north and find another spot that, Jacob, you had on the map. And you're like, this looked good. I wanted to kind of go walk this. So we get out and we separate trails, because we were going to go hunt the same trail. And then when we're literally getting the dogs ready to go, I remembered my young 14-month-old pup just had her first heat cycle. And so we thought it best not to run Quinn in her first heat cycle with Tig on the ground for obvious reasons. So we split up and I went down the road and with Zach, and we found another spot, but we had everything on the GPS marked so that you and Tig would stay clear of Quinn. And so that's when you had the issue is you're out hunting and you saw that you guys were kind of heading into where we were at with Quinn, and you just decided to turn around and go the opposite way.
Yeah.
So on this walk, it was interesting in a lot of different ways. The first walk was pretty much a bust for Zach. But this one, we get there, it looks great right out of the gate. Like, I'm telling Zach, I'm like, this cover looks good. I'm excited for this. And it was one of those, the further you walked, the better it looked. And I'm just getting more and more excited. I'm pointing at things. I'm giving him the 101 spiel, like, this is that. Look for this. This is how you handle the dog. And Quinn's on the ground, and Quinn's has been on fire. I mean, it's just like everything you could dream of a pup's first season in the grouse woods. She is really kind of fulfilled and exceeded in a lot of ways, and she's been on fire these past 2 weeks. And so I was excited to get her out and continue the streak, if you will. And Zach, I could tell, Zach, what was your first initial kind of response to seeing how Quinn was working the cover in comparison to maybe the other dogs that you've seen, specifically Arlo that morning, and some of the dogs that you've seen in the past in Tennessee?
My first reaction to that was definitely that it's something that my dog will never do.
Okay.
I have seen other dogs that do have great searches and do a good job finding dogs, but watching a dog get out there, range out, and really cover land is always super cool to see.
So we go out. She's out there doing her thing. She's just searching. I'm casting. It's just like I'm pointing out to you. You've seen it, Jacob. I don't know if the trail you're on or the cut you're on was similar, but it was as big aspen cut, but it's like they left a lot of good seed oaks out there, and they left a lot of good little islands of conifers out there. And so, like, it really gave Quinn some nice objectives to check off as we were walking through this cover. And I was explaining to Zach that, especially last week, that the grouse were just hammering the acorns. And I'm like, you know, when you see all this aspen and then you see these little seed oaks that are still out there, you want the dog to go under each and every one of those. And it wasn't, I don't know, man, we weren't out there, what, Zach, half an hour? And we started getting into action, and Zach got shot off, you know, the collar goes off. We go in, I'm working Quinn, and all of a sudden bird gets up, Zach shoots at it, misses. And I look back, and you could tell his eyes were as big as saucers, and you could tell that he had that initial, like, crap, they're fast.
Yeah, because we have everything linked together, and since I'm just over there, I can hear. I'm close enough where I my handheld's going off whenever she goes on point as well. So I hear the handheld go off, and I'm just listening for the shot.
It's like a play-by-play action from afar.
It is. I'm just waiting for the shot, and you end up hearing a shot, or you don't hear something. It's like, oh, getting a drink of water or taking a leak or something like that, and just keep walking. And then once you do hear it, it's piece by piece together.
Well, it was hilarious because we've all been there. The first impression of, crap, those birds move fast. Like, that flush happens really fast. He had that face on him. He was just like, I think it was a grouse. It was like, you know, it doesn't surprise the guys that have been doing this for a while. Like, that initial reaction, we've all been there and done that. But what surprised me, and not really surprised me, but, like, was fortunate after that, is he missed. Woodcock gets up, and I actually shot at that one. I missed that one. It was like, it was all just boom, 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 boom. And then I'm like, all right, well, let's recuperate. Water Quinn, I'll release her. And, I mean, it wasn't a minute later, 2 minutes later, boom, she's on point again, 40 yards. I'm like, all right, let's go. And this time, Zach's moving a little faster on this one. He's catching up. He's going even. And we get to this little conifer island, and I send him to the left. And Quinn's holding on point. I circle around to the right, and it was a very interesting sounding flush. Like, it wasn't the typical just, and that you see the bird flying out. It's like you hear a bunch of crashing, and the bird's trying to flush. Quinn's still holding on point. That was my first initial reaction. I'm like, oh, she busted in, and she's chasing this bird, and the bird can't get out. Like, nah, she was still on point. But that bird was in such thick cover, it honestly could not get out and flush for a second. And finally, it kicks out. But because it made such a ruckus trying to get out, I had plenty of time to set my feet and get ready and just made a nice shot. And she goes and gets it, retrieves it, and comes back. And Zach comes, and he's got those big eyes again, like, holy crap, this is real. It happens. It actually transpires, and I'm here to see it. And I hand him the bird, and you could just tell he's like, this is cool. This is awesome. Zach, what was going through your mind when you finally got to hold a ruffed grouse in your hand for the first time?
Well, reality kind of hit me. They're bigger than I thought they were, but it was something else getting to actually see one in person and hold one when you've been looking for them for so long.
Did it make you want to just keep going even more? Like, did it, you know, obviously you came up here for a 1 or 2 day hunt, and so you wanted it pretty bad, but, like, what did it do for your motivation after that, just actually being able to see a full sequence for the first time? Because, like you said at the start of this, you've gone on Tennessee hunts, you've gone on the unicorn hunts, but you haven't seen one in action. So you haven't even seen a pointing dog find point, search, you know, flush. You haven't witnessed all that. So, like, kind of walk me through your first impressions of it.
Yeah, I wanted to get one for myself, but I really wanted to have a dog that did a good job of hunting them and giving me opportunity. It definitely, I wanted to keep going and find more birds. And
well, while we were having that grand old time, that amazing experience, just a little bit further east of us, Jacob was having a little bit different of a time, because as soon as Zach hands me back the bird, my phone rings, and it's Jacob. And I thought he must have heard us shooting and yelling, like, good girl and all that stuff. I was waiting on the congrats, like, oh, did you get one? I answered the phone, and Jacob, what had happened to you while we were having fun on our end?
I said, I'm going to need some help, is what that was. So Tig got into a porcupine.
Yeah.
He got every bit of it.
Yeah, he didn't do one of these little glance, you know, contacts. He made it worth it. He made it count.
Yeah, he delivered to hand.
As happy as can be.
He killed it and delivered it to hand, came by, set, did what he's supposed to do. And as he's sitting there, I'm figuring out how I'm going to get a hold of it. And tried to do a quick game plan of what now? Because kind of set up just in case it got into a porcupine from last year to this year. We haven't had that issue up until the last day of the hunt. And he came up. We were walking down a fire break, and I thought he was working grouse. You could tell he was tracking from watching the GPS. And listen, you can after hunting all week with the bell for the first time, he can kind of pick up on what the bell sounds like when he's tracking and when he's just running. And I thought he was tracking grouse because we're in great cover. Is any second there's going to be a grouse come up. And now he turns the corner and there's a porcupine in his mouth. And he comes over, sits, and delivers it to me. And I grabbed it. And right when I told him out, I shoved my hand in his mouth because he was full of them. That way he wasn't chomping down on them, making matters worse.
So this is the second time that a buddy of mine has come to Wisconsin and joined me on a rough grouse hunt that I end up having to pull quills and help out in this regard. The first one was Austin a few years back at the very start of this podcast, actually. It was like one of the first few episodes we were talking about it. Cash got into it, and then now Tig. But, you know, I don't know if we even said at the start of this what kind of dog Tig is. For those that are listening to this based on, you know, how he went in and grabbed it, killed it, and brought it back to hand, they might be guessing that it was a draught. And they'd be right.
Yeah.
Not to be too cliche.
The draught thing on that one.
Take a draught into the woods, and this is what you come out with. But what's funny is, like, you said it, like, I need help. And it's like, well, yeah, you have a freaking 90-pound horse over there with a mouthful of porcupines. And so Zach and I immediately turn around. We're like, all right. And I'm sitting here like, man, of course I'm coming to help my buddy. Like, we're going to go help. We're going to do what needs to be done. But I'm just sitting here looking at this amazing cover and this dog, the sun just finally opened up for the first time in like 4 days. Like, you know, this is like prime time to be.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I unloaded my gun just so I wasn't tempted on the walk back. I made sure I unloaded it that just in case we saw a grouse. I didn't get tempted.
So I'm sitting there. So it's like, all right, let's turn around. Let's go back to the truck. But part of me is, you know, kind of looking over my shoulder. I'm like, oh man, like, this is horrible timing, Tig. But we get back to the truck. I do a quick tailgate check on Quinn, make sure she's good, put her in the box, and we head your way. And we pull up, and you're just sitting next to the truck. You know, you have the jig in his mouth and you're trying to pull quills and everything. And I pull up and you got like a half grin on your face and he's just laying on the ground with his tail wagging and just quills everywhere. Like, he made it count.
Yeah. I'm not going to say it's the worst I've seen, but it's definitely not the best one I've seen.
It wasn't like 4 or 5 and move on your day. This is his day and possibly trip is probably done.
Yeah, I'm not going to risk it tomorrow.
Yeah.
No, I don't think it's going to be worth it. I'm still pulling quills out that's been embedded. Yeah. We pulled 3 out right before we started this.
Well, and it's important to, you know, a lot of people, you know, the porcupine quills, it's, you kind of have to take this on a case-by-case basis. Some dogs literally go and they get like 3 in the nose. That's it. Like, you know, knock on wood, if you ever run into a porcupine, that's your experience. Other dogs, on the other hand, that they go all out. And Tig went for it. And really, it's like when it's that bad, I tell everybody, like, you need to go sedate them. Like, you know, you need to get them to the vet and sedate them to make sure that you get all the quills out that you can. And so we weren't out there. I mean, we were out there pulling for quite a while, but we weren't out there trying to get every single quill out. We were trying to make sure his airway was clear, that he could open and close his mouth, because I mean, it was everywhere. It was,
yeah, his mouth was full, especially the roof and tongue, and that was, I think, what was bugging him the most, just because he couldn't shut his mouth. Anytime he did try to do anything, he was getting poked then too.
And then you had the jig in, and anybody that's not familiar with a jig, this is one of those things that it's good to have in your vest. It's good to have in your first aid kit. And essentially, to describe what it is picture a wooden dowel, a big stick, you know, a big round stick, and you just kind of put it in the back of the mouth to where they can't close their jaws, right? It prevents them from closing. And then you have oftentimes paracord, or I've seen bungee cords, or just rope in general, something kind of screwed and tied into the ends. And you go up back behind the head, right behind the ears, almost as a good like collar fastening. And you just tie it behind the ears, and they can't get it out. They can't dislodge it. And so their mouth is permanently open. And then you can go about trying to pull quills. And that kind of depends on how bad they are, where they're at, the type of dog. With Tig being a giant horse of a draught, it took me and you, which neither one of us are really small guys by any means, it took both of us pinning this dude down.
Yeah, and there's a couple times where we just kind of had to let him do what he did and just contain it.
Yeah, yeah. And because it's like he could hurt himself by fighting us as much as he was. Sometimes you just kind of have to give him a little bit of space and to maneuver a little bit. But ultimately, like, our main priority was just making sure the mouth was clear. And we knew that we have to go into the vet on this. So we do that. We spend quite a while just clearing out the mouth and making sure his airway was good. And that's when Zach hopped in your truck. You carried Tig in the back of the truck, and we take it to the vet. What was the vet experience? We were there for a little bit. You know, it was hilarious. He got doped up, and that dude was just still full of quills, just on the vet table, just wagging his tail, just thump, yeah. Thump, thump, thump. Just, he was happy as could be.
I think the only thing that made him mad about the whole thing was pulling him out. He didn't like that. And no, the vet did great. They got him sedated, and me and her just went at it and pulling quills out. And we were there for a couple hours, just still pulling quills out, and got everything we could get. And made it, it was a whole lot easier than sitting on him when he's nice and lively out in the out in the parking spot there in the woods.
Yeah. Well, was there anything at the vet that stands out to you that was interesting? Something maybe you didn't know, you know, anything worth sharing on the podcast besides just, you know, you guys just kind of embraced the suck, put them down, and started pulling?
Yeah, the one thing that did is I haven't really aged porcupines on size since they're not around where I live at, and I haven't been up here enough to see enough of them. When we started pulling them after we got into them, she goes, it was a young one he got into just with how much the quills were breaking. And she's like, that it was a young one. They break too easy. They're not as, the quill's not as dense, I guess, or hard. And something that she said was, thinking about it, it probably was. It wasn't a huge porcupine. It was big enough for me, I guess.
Well, dadgum, Tig, a real drought would have killed a full-on adult male porcupine, man. Yeah, he's at the feet. He's still coming down from that sedation. He was stoned as a monkey for all afternoon on that. But he's good now. You know, there's still some in there, and obviously you got to be on the lookout for that for some time. They'll start festering out and stuff like that. But did she say anything else in terms of, like, be on the lookout for, be concerned with possibly?
Yeah, she just said keep checking him because there's some still that's in his mouth that they'll probably push through one side of the lip or the other. He's got a cluster of them broke off or embedded in his ear. And then there's some on the side of his head that they're just embedded there. It's got to keep watching out for. See if you see any swelling, get him to the vet. And just got to keep checking on him.
Did she say, like, swelling is, like, indicative of an infection or just anything like that? I mean, what does the swelling indicate, I guess?
She kind of said that it's going to be moving. We know that. But they move towards the dark end of the quill. Well, when the dark end's the tip of it, then it's going to be moving in more. And so hopefully that ain't the case. It kind of works its way out, but a lot of them could work their way in. And around the eyes, it could make a dog blind. And if it was around the chest cavity or stomach, you could have a lot of issues there with the vitals.
So, yeah, just keep an eye out on that. Hopefully there's no more issues, but he seems to be fine. But then again, you know, Tig, the type of dog that he is, you could probably go drop him to go hunt tomorrow and wouldn't see any issues.
It has me thinking twice about, gosh, I'm going to come up here again. I know that, but
yeah, play it safe. Go home.
It's going to be, I'm guessing he's going to do it again. Hopefully not as bad, but I feel like he's going to go right back after him if he does see one run. Hopefully I see it first this time.
Yeah. So while you're at the vet, you know, Zach and I eventually left. You know, there's only so much, you know, everybody can do for one dog with a bunch of porcupine quills. So we leave and we link up with old timer Bill, which the original plan was for all of us to go for a last hunt and everybody kind of in camp get to to spend one evening together hunting over at least one or two dogs. This time we kind of hit a mulligan, hit redo, and we took Arlo out. Being the first and last day in camp, we wanted to give Arlo a fair shake. Let's make the trip up here worth it, or at least try to. And real quick, Zach, what would you think Arlo would do if he came across a porcupine in comparison to Tig?
I really don't know. He loves chasing squirrels and he enjoys fur game, but I really don't have
any idea. There's no telling. You could see it going either way with him.
I would prefer not to find out.
So fortunately on this walk, we didn't come across any porcupines, but me and you, we linked up with Bill. And you have hunted with Bill, old-timer Bill. You're one of the guys in Tennessee that when I talk about Bill kind of mentors really any of the quote-unquote younger guys in Tennessee, he's the guy that does it. And you linked up with Bill two seasons ago?
Yeah, two or three years ago.
So, you know, you've been out with Bill a couple times, but again, this is the first time in bird country. And so me and Bill and you take Arlo. We're not dropping any other dogs. All the other dogs have had their time to shine, you know, the whole trip. This is all about Arlo, and hopefully connecting dots is just, like you said, there are birds out there. Let's go find them. Let's go search for them. Just for him to realize that they exist and that we can go find them. Talk to me about what your thought process is going into, because you already talked about this morning didn't leave the best feeling inside for you in terms of how he was searching. You know, he really didn't get a whole lot of chance or opportunity to do much of anything this morning because the honey hole was cut down. I mean, so this second walk, what are you hoping to get out of it? What's your thought process going into it?
What I was looking for mainly was just exposure. This morning we had talked, and after seeing Quinn hunt and realizing that that's just something that Arlo will not be, I decided that I'll probably end up just getting an English dog here in a couple years to hunt grouse with and still be able to use Arlo for tracking or duck hunting and stuff like that. But tonight, if we could just get him on a bird, I knew that if he got one in his mouth, it would flip a switch. He would start hunting.
And it's one of those that can be tough to do when you're talking about just get a bird in the dog's mouth. You have to first find the bird. Then, especially on this bird, then you have to shoot the bird. He actually does have good retrieve drive. You've actually gone through force fetch with him. You know, you and I have kind of messaged and gone through that. And he's got a healthy retrieve drive and capability in that regards. But first we have to find it. Then we have to shoot it. And I guess that's where old timer Bill falls in. We go and we find a bird. Again, you know, circling back to what I was talking about earlier, we're in just a sea of conifer. Like, it's just too much conifer, right? Like, they're all actually healthy size. It's not the really tall, like, big spruce, just never-ending sea of planted conifers. It's a good, healthy mix of white pines and balsam firs and all kinds of different ones mixed in. But there's nothing else. And I was telling you, you know, the name of this game is variety. And you have to have those three elements. With all the conifers, we have the shelter. The water's everywhere because it's been raining for a week here pretty much. The food. There really wasn't food. I mean, if you went out on the trails, you could find the clover, you could find the wild strawberry. But besides that, there was no food. And then I think we stopped and I started pointing down the trail. I'm like, all right, there's finally an oak on the left, then a little small oak on the right. And then, okay, here's some hazel. Like, we were finally starting to kind of get into some food. And on the right side of the trail, I can't remember. It doesn't stand out to me what Arlo was doing, but me, you, and Arlo were on the right side of the trail, and Bill was hanging back a good ways, I don't know, 20, 25 yards or so. And we flush a bird out. And you didn't hear it. I'm like, you know, bird, bird, bird. And you know, finally you key in on it, but it's way too late. Like, it just, there's no shot opportunity. Then all of a sudden we hear bow, and Bill's like, yeah. And I see where the bird goes down, and I'm like, this is the great opportunity. This is what's, you know, going to get Arlo excited. And so Arlo ends up going over there and getting the retrieve. And to your point, Arlo is a different dog after that. I mean, just a wild flush. We walked the bird up. I don't think he's ever smelled it or keyed in on it. Do you remember?
Nothing stood out to me as far as that goes. I think there was some stuff growing in the middle of the walkway. I think he was smelling down in.
Okay. So before that, I mean, there's a couple things that would make him pop on this walk. You would see his head turn, his nose would go high. Sometimes it would go down on the ground, but he still just wasn't connecting that, like, we're out there to hunt. It was just like you described earlier. It's like, okay, it's another fun run. After that bird, he got it in his mouth, and we let him parade with it for a little while, take ownership, enjoy it, have fun with it. And then when he finally started kind of, you know, tonguing it and mouthing it a little bit, then it's like, all right, take it from him. From then on, Jacob, you should have seen this dog. He was ranging 60-plus yards out,
yeah,
hitting objectives, getting pulled off the trail, and, I mean, cranking hard. Like, he would just be running, and out of nowhere, it's like, you know, somebody set the hook on a fishing line or something. He would just get jerked to the right and just take off into cover. And Zach would try and hightail it up there to keep up with them. It was... I've seen a lot of dog switches get flipped before, but none to that extent. Like, it was pretty eye-opening in a lot of ways, to where, like, this dog went from having zero search and hunt to all of a sudden it was like, it was on. It was just, he knew there's stuff out there. I'm on it now.
He realized he was out there for a reason at that point.
Yeah, yeah. And so... that was at the point where Zach, I look up and he's just smiling. Like, I followed you into one of the conifer patches that he just, you know, hooked right and went down into, and you're looking at the collar remote, of which at this point you didn't even have a reason to really have the tracking collar. But then you're looking at it and you're like, he's 65 yards. He's further than 65 yards, and he looks at me, and he's just like, he's never gone this far. And what was it like? I mean, try and put it into words to where, I mean, I could tell the relief. The monkey was off your back, and he didn't even find a bird. It's not like he pointed or you got to shoot your first one, but you could tell, like, just seeing the hunt turn on in this dog meant the world to you.
Nick, there aren't words. I've seen it a handful of times when we're woodcock hunting or something like that, but it's one of the greatest things. Actually working and training these dogs and spending so much time and energy on them and taking them out. And if we killed something one day or not, that's not a big deal. But seeing your hard work pay off and seeing your dog have a good time is all worth it.
Well, and I mean, you came out of one point to where I followed you in on the first few, you know, maybe we get lucky and I can get some pictures of him, because I'm not even carrying a gun on this walk. I'm just there to enjoy the experience. And I was following, maybe I'll get lucky. And then he got to shooting off into some of these conifer patches. And I'm like, you know what? I'll see y'all when y'all come back to the trail. You came back and I think you told Bill one time, you're like, it almost brings tears to your eyes.
It was emotional. It really was. It makes a big difference. It's frustrating, especially when you're out with people, having a dog that won't hunt.
Yeah.
And knowing there are birds out there, but he doesn't know that. But you can't just tell him that and him believe you. But when he actually got that bird in his mouth and he realized there were birds out there to find, he changed, and it was cool to see.
Because he just turned three. He's not a puppy, but he's not an old dog by any means. I mean, he's still exposure. You do your best that you can on the weekends, you know, weekend warrior style of getting them out and getting them hunting. You just said that you take them woodcock hunting, but correct me if I'm wrong, this is the first time he's ever had a true wild bird in his mouth that's never been touched by a human hand before.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like pen-raised birds, all that stuff. He's played that game for a while, and you've just never seen that hunt kind of come alive like it did today, because he literally got a fresh, warm bird in his mouth, and we didn't touch it. We didn't even, foot scent wasn't even around it. Like, it just, it's amazing what these true wild birds will do to a bird dog. It's like their genetics just kick on after laying dormant for so long. It just completely different dog. So what was some of the main takeaways that you had on that walk, be it from me, Bill, Arlo? Like, what was some of the main lessons to where, again, you crammed a lot into today? You got a lot of learning experience from the very first walk all the way through this last walk. What were some of the main takeaways that you had on the successful walk with me and Bill?
Well, we learned a lot about different foods and covers for the birds, but I think that was the biggest realization was just how true the saying that birds make a bird dog is. And seeing that it only took that one bird to really flip that switch and turn things around.
Jacob, what were some of the main lessons that you learned throughout this week? You spent the majority of the week without help figuring out, piecing it together. What were some of the main lessons that you're taking away from this?
I think I was a little strict on the dog when it comes to handling the birds. I could have been successful last year in Michigan shooting birds if that was my goal, was just to shoot birds. I wanted to make sure that he understood how to handle these birds well. So I was a little strict. There's probably some birds I should have shot that I had shots on. He just got a little too close on when he relocated. He's bumping these birds, which it kind of is what it is. More just trying to learn the habitat. I learned a lot on what these birds eat, where they're hanging out at least in bad weather like we had this week. I'd say that's the biggest one, is just trying to figure out what they do on a day-to-day basis, because it's with the grouse, it changes year-round. And during the hunting season, it could be like last Sunday, we had 60-plus degree weather, bright and sunny. They weren't in the conifers that day. That's where I was kind of hitting, just because that's where I found them at the day before. And so just trying to figure out the habitat's the big one.
Yeah, figuring out how to pattern them. It kind of goes into some of the main things that I appreciate the most about rough grouse, is just like how you can go into the weeds on this as much as you want. Like everybody, some people just like to go drop dogs and go for a walk and not really overanalyze what they're hitting. They're not trying to pattern the birds. It's just like, it's high stem density. It's a cut. Let's just go see if we find a grouse. And I get that. I get that approach. It's like, let's just go see what happens. But I also kind of see it as some people really nerd out and they like to pattern the birds. And it's almost like a chess match almost. You strategize and it's like, okay, the rain's here, so let's go hit up the conifer this way, or the cold front's moving in. So, I bet they're trying to fill up before they go to roost. So let's go hit this. And that's what I appreciate about rough grouse hunting, is it's like, there's a million different ways to come at this, and everybody finds appreciation in it for a completely different way, it almost seems like to me. I don't know if you guys would agree with that.
No, I 100% agree. I'm not going to say this is my favorite type of hunting.
Right.
It's going to be a whole lot more fun out there on the prairie shooting all kinds of birds, but you have that appreciation for that grouse, because it is, from what I've done so far, is the smartest bird. It's going to outsmart the dog, is going to outsmart you, is going to do something different every single day. So it's one of them of, you can't just do what you always do. You got to do what the grouse want to do and play their game.
Zach, what are your thoughts on it? What is it about rough grouse hunting that's going to stick with you? Like, why do you find it can be a miserable thing to go and try and do? So like, why, what is appealing about it to you that makes you want to keep trying or get better at it?
That's a great question. It's really something that I've never thought about. Gosh, Nick, I just want one so bad. I mean, when you spent so much time looking for them, it has been really cool to learn about them, and I do want to continue to do that. And I want Arlo to continue to be more proficient in hunting and tracking them.
Would you agree with what Jacob just said in terms of maybe it's not the most fun bird to hunt, but like that right in of itself kind of makes it more to where you have to appreciate them even more?
I wouldn't agree that. I don't think they're the most fun birds. I really enjoyed this. There's a lot of thought that goes into it that you have to take into play that I enjoy.
Yeah. So you like the strategic element of it.
Absolutely. And especially up here when you're not walking through thorns and briar patches. It's so much better.
Yeah. I would say I'm not going to say I agree with Jacob, but I agree with what you're saying in terms of, if you talk about like the most fun bird, like if somebody came up to me and a listener, and I do get asked this from time to time, especially leading up into season, is like, I want to go out with my dog and I want to shoot birds and I want to have fun. I'm not going to probably say rough grouse hunting is for that person. Like if you're just looking to go out and shoot and have fun, like to me, there are better birds and better habitat that they, you know, certain birds live in that's more conducive for that type of style. But if the way I describe it is, it may not be the most fun, but it's the most fulfilling.
Absolutely. You got to appreciate what that bird's doing.
Yeah. It's like it's the most rewarding. You really have to embrace the suck, getting poked in the eye with the limbs, like going through crap. You know, it's just when you go to take a shower at the night, all the pine needles are coming out of your hair and out of your clothes. You're covered in ticks every time you come out of these walks. Like there's a lot to deter somebody to where, if you haven't been out and you really haven't seen these birds, like I can see why the average person would be like, why would you want to do that? Are you insane? Like, it doesn't sound like fun. But when it connects, it's like you're hooked. You know, I think, Jacob, you got your first bird this week. So, you know, and you've had tastes of it over the past year, but you finally got your first bird this week. So I have a feeling that you're hooked for a while. Zach, it seems like just by seeing Arlo's light switch, like you're really hooked and you haven't gotten your first bird yet. So that, to me, like that's a great example of what I'm talking about, to where it, to me, in all the birds that I've hunted so far in the uplands, it is the most rewarding. It is the most fulfilling, because more times than not, you're going to look bad. You're going to look awful. The bird's going to make your dogs look bad. The dogs can do everything right. You can do everything right, and you still come up shorthanded. It's like for everything to work out, like at the end of it, you still have to have a little bit of luck on your side, almost, for that bird to fly in the right direction and you just get a shot off. And that's not for everybody. I'm not saying everybody should prefer rough grouse hunting, but if you're the guy that likes to, I equate it to, you know, you have people that like to go deer hunting just to fill up the freezer. And then you have the people that really like to read maps, topographical maps, and map out and put trail cams out and start patterning these big bucks. I kind of feel like the rough grouse is that version in the uplands. Would you agree?
Yeah, I'd say if you and your dog have kind of figured out, especially the dog figuring out how to hunt these grouse, you're going to be able to hunt, go anywhere in the country and hunt any type of bird. Yeah. I do. Just with a handful of different species I've hunted, the grouse stands out above all of them.
So moving forward, what's left in the season for you? I mean, I know that we have a few more months. Are you excited to go back to Indiana, maybe make the weekend trips up to Michigan? Zach, are you excited to go back to the land of unicorns and continue to do this? Or are you guys going to be looking, it's like, you know, it's like, I like it. I want to do it. I want that first bird. Like Zach, you just very well put, just, I really want that bird. But is it something that, is it worth the effort in the locations that you guys kind of live in to pursue throughout the rest of the season? Or are you guys going to wait to just reserve that for when you're in bird country?
No, I'm 100% going to be making some weekend trips up to Michigan during their late season after a little break for deer rifle. Season. Next week is opening week of pheasant for Indiana, so I'm going to walk a whole lot to shoot one or two pheasants, hopefully, and then do a little bit of deer hunting. And once grouse kicks up back in Michigan, I'll be making a weekend trip up there a couple times.
So you're going to be chasing that high again, so to speak, throughout the season. So while you're saying that, you know, it's not the most fun, you would still, you know, rather do that than stick around Indiana and do the pheasant hunting there?
Yeah, I can't say I'm a huge fan of pheasant hunting. I don't have that same reward. The dog work hasn't been the greatest just because they run forever.
The cattails.
The habitat is what it is. that doesn't bother me. You're out walking. I enjoy being in the woods. Yeah. And there is that fulfillment of if you do harvest a grouse.
That's another aspect none of us really touched on, is just being in the woods with the upland birds. Like, you get the prairie, you get the cattails, you get the desert with the quail. Like, I've been in a lot of different areas, but there is something special about being in the woods chasing birds like this. It's kind of cool and unique. There's not, you know, you got blue grouse and other grouse species that you can chase in the woods, but just grouse in general, like just being chasing birds in the woods is pretty special to me as well. Zach, what about you though? I can't say you're going to be excited to chase it in Tennessee, but has this, I guess, motivated you more to want to chase it in Tennessee, or are you really going to kind of focus or look towards next season and getting like a longer trip in the North Woods?
Well, we definitely will be taking at least a week to come back. 3 days was hard, but it was good, minus the little setbacks. But when I get back, I'm going to also be doing a little bit of different hunting, but I got some leads on where there might be some grouse, and I'm really interested to seeing how the habitat up here transfers to the habitat down there, and what the grouse are eating down there, what they're using for cover, and all of that. So I think there's a lot to learn in order to figure out where the last two or three grouse around are going to be.
Well, guys, it was a pleasure sharing camp with you guys a few days. You know, I know everything didn't go to plan, especially today. We had a nice master plan that fell out as soon as we got to the first spot. And that's part of hunting. Sometimes you got to go with the flow and be flexible and make it work. You know, ideally not with porcupine quills, but, you know, hey, stuff happens. That's why you got to be prepared. That's why you got the first aid kit, right?
Yeah. I had it in my vest. And
oh, real quick, you're sitting here playing with your hemostats and everything. Why don't you tell everybody about, you know, the lesson that we learned on cheap medical utensils, if you will?
Yeah, the ones that are curved at the end, they worked good while we were there, but the other ones that were straight, they were bent at some point, being in my vest, and they didn't hold up. They weren't grabbing any quills. They were just slipping the whole time, and it just became frustrating after a handful of times doing it.
Yeah, and the vet, once she saw the tools that you were using, she took pity on you and actually gave you a nice, like, what'd you say, that's like a German model of hemostats? It's like a heavier duty. It's not some, like, cheap little fake metal looking stuff. Like, this is legit.
Well, I tried taking what she was using, and she wasn't gonna let me take them ones. They were apparently the high dollar ones. She goes, I'll get you some though, and she brought me these ones, which are still great quality and
a lot better than the cheaper version. So, and that's a good point, because I think I have the same versions that you had, to where they went in the vest, and I haven't come across porcupines, so I haven't taken them out, and so I might need to check mine to see if they're bent, because to your point, the straight ones that were bent, they were useless.
I mean, and it's not something you just check on a daily basis, which it is that reminder of, hey, check all your gear, make sure it is working, because you got a handful of stuff in the backpack portion of the vest that you, I guess, got a handful of stuff in there, and when you need it, you want to make sure it works.
No, absolutely. Anything else come to mind? Anything remaining that we didn't touch on before we wrap this up? Or are you guys good to go? I know we're going to go drink a few more beers and then hit the bed. And Zach, you know, you and I have an early start to get to. I got a carpool partner now. That car isn't limping home tomorrow.
Yeah.
You're going to love it. Have a good time.
Well, yep. Guys, I appreciate it as always. Everybody, thanks for listening. Stay tuned for the outro, and we'll talk soon.
Why is it usually form or function when it comes to shotguns? You either hear about the looks or craftsmanship of this shotgun, while that shotgun over there in the corner hasn't been cleaned in 2 seasons but supposedly fits and shoots like a dream. Why can't it be both? This is what Upland Gun Company does. They take your own personal measurements and will construct the very shotgun that should handle like a dream, while getting you the looks and custom features that only you can decide on. Whether it's a side-by-side or over-under, English stock or full pistol grip, custom engraving such as your dog's portrait, even down to selecting the wood grain on your stock. Head on over to uplandguncompany.com and build the dream gun that you would carry in the field with your dog for many seasons.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America N.A., member FDIC.
All right, everybody. Hope you enjoyed that episode presented by Standing Stone Supply, Onyx Hunt, DT Systems, Upland Gun Company, and Final Rise. I met Jacob and Zach years ago through the NAVDA chapter, and, you know, it just kind of goes to show, I've said it before and I'll say it again, I think that probably the most beneficial aspect of getting involved in an organization such as NAVDA is the relationships and networking that it affords you when you get involved and you become active. And I've made numerous friendships throughout the years through NAVDA and other organizations, and Jacob especially. You know, I've known him a little bit longer than Zach, and we've shared a number of hunts, including South Dakota and just local, you know, quail hunting and woodcock hunting and stuff like that. And I was glad to be able to link up with him. You know, he moved out of Tennessee, and we've been looking for an excuse to try and link up and, you know, get some walks in again. And then Zach, as you heard in this episode, he just ate up with it. He's just trying to figure it out. He's trying to learn. He's trying to get his dog on birds, and not to keep beating a dead horse, but it's just very challenging to do when you live down here in the Southeast. It is what it is. But it does go to show that, you know, again, we've made this point time and time again. If you really want to develop a true wild bird dog, you have to go get it on wild birds. There's just no substitute. We can do what we can with launchers, pigeons, pen-raised birds, what have you. There is no substitute for actual wild birds and the actual wild bird that you are hoping to chase with your individual dog. It makes a huge bit of difference. So with that being said, you have to, depending on where you live in the country and your goals with your individual dog, you have to be willing to travel. And you have to be willing to travel and just make it happen when and where you can. You never know when an opportunity is going to come up. You know, Zach reached out and asked, he had a couple dates available and he was looking to get on some wild birds, you know, within a reasonable drive time, not something that was 20 plus hours. And that's where I invited him up to close out the grouse camp in my kind of loop through the North Woods. And I'm glad he was able to make it up. It was unfortunate that he struck that deer on the way up. But, you know, anybody that's been doing these trips long enough, and it doesn't have to be a hunting specific trip, you know, just traveling in general, you're going to have accidents, you're going to have issues, you're going to have hurdles. It's baked into the cake. And so you just have to be prepared the best you can. And Zach, he made it up to Wisconsin, and he just kind of, he made as much lemonade out of those lemons as you could. He got up there, he ended up selling the car and riding back with me, and he still made it work. And I'm glad he did. And, you know, a lot of people listening to this might think that the doing so and putting forth that effort, especially with the headache and wrecking your car with a deer, it's, you know, they might be asking if it was really worth it or not. And when it comes down to it, if you really want to do it and you live in an area with no wild birds, you just have to take the chances. You have to take the opportunities. If you get invited, you have to go. I mean, I remember I've done numerous 12, 15 hour one-way trips just because I've been invited before. And that is what it is. And really, there's no way for somebody to tell you that it is worth it. It's kind of left up to each individual, of course. And then a guy like Jacob, what I've always appreciated about him is he's just truly out there to go hunting with his dog. He's up to a challenge. He's up to making it work, you know, as you heard in this episode, from budgeting and camping in the back of his truck and just kind of makeshifting a bed and out of a couple cheap little foam mattress or pads from the local store. It's just that's why I like traveling and hunting with guys like Jacob. He's just truly in it to actually go hunting and enjoy his time with his dogs. Tig is still, unfortunately, still having some issues with the porcupine. Jacob is still pulling some quills out of him, and he's dealing with some vets who, you know, some vets are recommending going in and cutting them open and getting the rest out, while some are still saying to see if they'll kind of fester out and pull themselves out. And so Jacob's kind of in that damned if you do, damned if you don't situation and not knowing what to do. So, porcupines are part of the equation. They're out there in the woods. It is what it is, especially if you have, you know, I know the German dogs kind of get beat up on this point, but, you know, it's the stereotype that has some element of truth to it. I mean, let's just be real and honest with each other. Now, there are some English dogs and other breeds that will get into it. And, you know, you don't have to just have a German dog to have to deal with a porcupine issue. But Tig really made it count. If you guys hadn't seen the post I made a couple weeks ago on Instagram, that was the picture that I took after we removed quite a bit of quill. So he definitely made it count, but it's a lingering issue. And that's why, you know, some guys will get hit, or some dogs will get hit, and the owners will just sit there and pull them out. And then the dog's back out hunting immediately afterwards. I mean, there's some kind of lesser interactions with porcupines that's really all it takes for a dog to learn its lesson. But then there's other cases such as this to where, you know, Tig, he made it count, and it's still bothering him, and there's still some concern. So hopefully, knock on wood, Jacob and Tig kind of get through this. And Tig, while mentally he seems fine, physically, you know, Jacob said that he's still just finding and pulling quills out constantly every single day. So it is what it is. If you do have an interaction with a porcupine, make sure you get all of them, because they will travel. Plenty of dogs have had issues months down the road, not just days or even hours. So, you know, just if your dog gets hit, you know, be prepared with the forceps, the pliers, the jig, as we described in this episode. You know, all of that stuff helps. But if you have any kind of doubt or question or concern whatsoever, you know, don't go on Facebook asking, you know, should I or should I not go to the vet? You know, if you have an actual question and it's that bad to kind of give you a pause for concern, then you just need to go in and see your vet. And that's pretty much all the advice I can give you on that. With that being said, I'm going to wrap this up. I appreciate everybody for tuning in and hitting download and play. As always, if you don't mind, share it with a friend. It goes a long way. It truly does. If you haven't followed us on social media or YouTube, by all means, go search under Gundog Yourself. The link's in the show note as well. I appreciate it as always, and we'll be back soon with another episode of GDIY. Thanks, guys. Everyone seems to have the same questions or concerns when they start trying to decide which kennel to purchase for their vehicle. Perhaps it's time to stop asking all the questions and just design the perfect setup that meets your exact needs. B-Pro Kennel specializes in designing and fabricating custom premier dog boxes handcrafted right here in the USA from high-grade, lightweight aluminum. They'll get you set up with the size dimensions, lighting, storage, battery boxes with solar charging, and anything else you can dream of. Stop stressing over buying the wrong setup just after replace it again in a year. Go ahead and check out bprokennels.com and get exactly what you want.
If you're considering changing your dog's food soon, then be sure to check out Eukanuba Pro Performance. Their science-backed formulas are designed to take your dog to the next level of performance. They also now have the new puppy formula to help your pup start strong and live active. When looking at all the different food options, remember Eukanuba to help power their ultimate performance.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? It's Bob from Lone Duck's Gun Dog Chronicles podcast. I hope you just enjoyed the episode you just listened to. And if you did, I think you'll enjoy hopping on ours. We've got professional retriever trainers and upland bird dog trainers from across the country and world sharing their tips and tricks and great stories to help you and your dog get ready for the season. We'll see you there.